This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
It's time for Ben's Vision.
Our mission starting this spring is to win and to win now.
Projecting how the Bears roster will take shape under new head coach Ben Johnson.
Ben's vision is going to be principle.
These are the type of players that I need. That's the vision.
If it doesn't fit Ben's vision, are you willing to move on from certain guys?
Really enjoy hearing Ben's vision.
Current roster, free agents, and the draft.
Our entire organization's fired up about Ben Johnson and his vision for winning football.
Ben's vision.
This offense will be calibrated with Caleb in mind. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope, we're ripping this thing down to the studs and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost and then with the pieces around him next.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We like to look at what the new head coach might be into doing as he builds up this team. What's his vision? What's Ben's vision for all sorts of positions around the football program?
And in this case, we talk also about Dennis Allen's vision. What kind of defensive ends does Dennis Allen want? How many does he usually roster in his defenses in the past as the man with the Saints? So do they have enough? You can never have enough, though, edge rushers, can you?
You can never have enough people who rush the quarterback.
It's Jason Lee just said it to us yesterday. Like, after quarterback, is it the number one skill that you want to have somebody or a few people really good at on your football team? It might be the number one after quarterback.
Usually that's what they say, is that you go get the quarterback, then you go get the person who gets the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good way to start thinking about how you're putting a draft together. So I don't think that they should consider themselves done with Dayo Odingbo. I don't think that they should be like, oh, problem solved.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because his production from a pressure standpoint, solid. His production of getting the quarterback on the ground, not as solid. So you still have to go out there and try and find people that are gonna make life for Montez easier.
Mm-hmm.
And we see what he looks like when there's a better group around him.
Yes, for sure. And you know, it's interesting because when you think about Dennis Allen's defenses and the people that have like dominated in sacks in the history of the New Orleans Saints, it's often been outside linebackers. It's not necessarily your classic defensive end. You're thinking of your big body defensive end, because Dennis Allen is a guy who attacks with a lot of different people and uses deception and confusion to get to the quarterback instead of just letting the front four do their job and hope his DNs are great.
He's a really good equalizer because he understands the confusion that you can cause an offensive line and the confusion that you can cause a quarterback by making things look like there's something else. So you can see, well, they're showing that there's four defensive linemen, and there's a regular 4-3 front, and then the defensive ends drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's questions if you're the tackles, like, wait, what just happened? Who's rushing? Who am I supposed to pick up? That's where you can equalize some of this stuff if you don't have it. But it would be great and ideal to have a front four that could just do work, and then you could get super exotic on when and how you blitz.
I don't think Dennis Allen was unhappy with Cam Jordan getting double-digit sacks multiple years on his defense in New Orleans. He's not unhappy with a 6'4", 287 defensive end who's like been the dominant pass rusher on that team for all these years. Let's hear from Ryan Poles, who talked about this defensive line in February and talked about what he still might be looking to add to it.
There's strategy to that, but I would probably argue and say if you get a good pass rusher in free agency and you draft a good pass rusher, you can't have enough good ones. I think we all watched that last game of the season, and that proves to be true. So, but yeah, you want to see how you can put the puzzle together where you can kind of fill all the needs perfectly. Sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, he's right about the last game of the season too. The idea of being able to get after it with your defensive line to cause havoc with the guys up front and then drop seven. And then go, even the best quarterback in the league was sitting there like, there's no pocket there, and I don't mean a pass pocket. There's no pocket for me to throw the ball. Everything's covered. And this guy is sitting on my head. Like, you have all of that stuff that if you have a strong defensive line, you can make hay.
Ben Johnson, whose vision matters, was talking about the early days once he had taken over, about he and his people meeting with Ryan Poles and his people and talking about what they need from certain positions.
We spent time every single day since I've been in the building, just me and him with his group, me with my group. And, you know, it's been between the scheme, talking about prototypes and what that looks like for each position group. That's me sitting in with some of the preliminary draft meetings and getting a feel for how they operate. I've got a lot of respect for his crew, that group of scouts. They've done a phenomenal job this fall collecting information and really starting to set that board for when it is time to pick those players. I feel strongly about that process, and it's been a day-by-day, week-by-week process getting on the same page, but it's been very good so far.
I'm so happy to hear this because it kind of goes with my working theory that has not been proven yet, but I'm still gathering data on it, that this is more of a partnership than the previous regime. That you now have a head coach that I think in some cases is walking Poles through the tape and saying, this is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Dennis has told me he wants. This is where this guy fits this role that we want to use and can do it immediately if you're thinking about drafting him.
Absolutely. And you want that. You want that at every spot. You want this guy to be telling you what he wants, and for Ryan Poles to be taking that in and adding that in to his own soup as he's thinking about it. Aiden Hutchinson. Ryan, we've had a guy in Detroit who's been pretty good for a couple of years. Maybe you know him, Aiden Hutchinson. I'd like you to find that. Okay, good. Thanks. I'm going to go back to looking at the offense. Go ahead and take care of that.
Finding one of those is, man, I hope that he is fully recovered. And I mean this just as a fan of football.
Just watching excellence. Watching a dude with those tools who has that motor to go along with.
And he still hasn't quite figured it out yet. And he's close. He's real close to figuring it out. And once he does, it's going to be a problem for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the athleticism, the lean that he has on his pass rush, the destructive nature of what he can do, how he doesn't fall for the banana in the tailpipe on screens and is athletic enough to then get back and be a problem if you're trying to screen it out. I hope that he's good to go because I'd like to see him back to full strength and what his career might end up being.
We did interior defensive line and talked a lot about that for Ben's Vision a little while back, and we've talked to some great folks about it. And in talking to Alex Brown, the former defensive end for the Saints when Dennis Allen was there as a defensive backs coach.
Fourth all-time in sacks for the Bears. You have to make sure you say fourth and not top five because he doesn't want to be known as fifth.
That's right. He's very particular about that. We looked at it. Who's fifth? He's ahead.
He's ahead of Wale. And
it's
someone else who's tied with Wale.
Yeah, but he was only behind three Hall of Famers, if memory serves.
That is correct.
Right. So it's Urlacher.
He's a ways behind them.
Sure, but he's right there.
He's glad that Khalil Mack is not back in a Bears uniform because I think Khalil was like seven or eight sacks behind him.
Oh, that's tremendous.
So it works out well. Anyway, we talked with AB about Grady Jarrett and how that opens up opportunities to maybe move Jervon Dexter a little bit.
I think you still can hope that Dexter Sr. can continue to move forward and be that guy in the middle. But you also bring in a veteran that can actually teach him and help him along, a guy that is built for a gap-style defense. Like, he's shooting a gap. He's getting upfield. When he's healthy, he is a monster, and he's a problem for any offense to have to deal with. So having that problem in the middle, now it helps our edge rushers. So it helps out Sweat. It helps the opposite end. It helps on blitzing where the quarterback can't step up into the pocket. So you want those guys in the middle. I mean, we had Tommy Harris, Tank Johnson, Ian Scott. Yeah, those guys that can get up the field in a hurry. And that's what you get, I think, in a 10-year veteran like Grady Jarrett. So I'm glad we made the move. I'm glad he's coming to Chicago. I think he's going to be a huge help, not just his productivity, but helping some of the young guys, and especially Dexter on that defensive line.
Mark Anderson had 12 and a half sacks in a season where Tommy Harris, the three technique, was healthy. He did so well that Alex ended up losing his job to Mark Anderson, which made him angry. Actually, made him grumpy, which is the shirt that he wore at training camp the next year.
Oh, God.
It just was grumpy, like the from Snow White and the Seven Doors.
Oh, okay.
You're just wearing that just around
represented.
Olivet Nazarene, that entire training camp.
That's hilarious.
But because Mark Anderson struggled against the run, and Alex took a lot of pride in being able to play the run, even as an undersized defensive end, Alex ended up getting his job back.
How about that? So that year when Anderson explosively has that sack count, that's with Tommy in the middle, like Grady Jarrett could be, and that's with Ogunleye on the other side.
Yep, you got Tommy, you got Tank, you got, I mean, they're rotating it. Was Dusty here too by then?
But point being, you got like a really good free agent D-end like Ogunleye, which frankly feels a lot like the Montez Sweat trade and acquisition. Talked about that directly when Montez got here and what that can do for a defense. And now if you're adding a really good three tech, then you know maybe it can just be a raw pass rushing talent that gets it done for you on the edge, which takes us to the draft, because they got to get one, and I'm cool if it's at 10.
All right, so let's see if we can find one. By the way, I feel like I saw Matt Miller on TV yesterday. Did I see the Guagi hat?
Dudes, ladies, listeners, the Guagi hat has landed. No, what? Guagi hat has landed at Matt Miller's house.
You guys heard of Guagi? Go up and get it, guys.
It's landed there. I've got a picture. It's glorious. It's sitting on top of a football in his background. But then he was on television on, what show is it, Lawrence? One of those ESPN shows where they talked football.
I think it's NFL Live.
Oh, yeah, which is hosted by Laura Rutledge.
It's not hosted by not Laura Rutledge, to be clear. And I took a picture of Matt Miller on that show and sent it to him and said, I'm fixated on your background. As we should be doing our show, but all I'm doing is watching your background. He said, quote, I have to move it. It didn't show up like I expected. The Guagi hat didn't show up in the background like I expected. All I said was, it's a long draft buildup season. So keep watching. Anytime you see Matt Miller on your TV talking draft, look behind him for a Guagi hat and feel free to tweet at him that he should move it into a higher profile spot.
But he was on this radio show talking about defensive ends and trying to figure out ways that the Bears could, I don't know, maybe end up with Abdul Carter.
So it's a great defensive end class. I have six guys with first round grades right now. Here's a fun like slash crazy scenario for you. Okay, let's say Cam Ward goes first to the Titans. Shedeur Sanders goes second to the Browns. Would you trade up for Abdul Carter? You had two second-round picks. checked a lot of needs.
I would.
And it's not going to be as expensive to trade up for a non-quarterback.
I would, like, but I'm crazy about him. So
I am too. He's my number one player in the draft. So I'm like, and I agree with you. Even with adding Deo and you have Montez Sweat, like, I still think the defensive end could be an early-ish need here, right?
Yes,
just because
yes.
the way teams are building. So, like, if Abdul Carter, I don't think he would make it past New England at four because I think Vrabel would draft him. But, like, if that scenario's there and the Giants are panicking, you know, it's like a full-on Kevin Costner draft day moment and the Giants are panicking, I would absolutely try to trade up to take him. Now, take that scenario off the dreamland table here. I think Mikael Williams from Georgia could be there at 10. Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M probably had a good enough combine that he's put himself ahead of where the Bears are at. I think the Jets at 7, the Panthers at 8, the Saints at 9 are all certainly in play for him. The weird thing is there's a drop-off after that, and it becomes some guys with some character questions. Mike Green from Marshall, it was disclosed at the combine that he was accused of sexual assault once in high school, and then a separate time while he was at Virginia, which led to his dismissal there, and he ends up at Marshall, leads the FBS in sacks last year. James Pierce from Tennessee, I was doing ESPN National Radio a week ago, and Ian Fitzsimmons asked me about him, and Fitz said that the folks at Tennessee wouldn't even let them talk to James Pierce last year. As they were embedded with the team, they were keeping him away from the media. So those two guys, I know you're going to see a lot of them in mock drafts. Man. I don't think they go anywhere close to the top 10, though.
Wow.
Are you mad at all if the Bears in a year where it's stand pat or trade down, if they traded away some future capital and came away with Abdul Carter, would you be mad?
I don't think I could be mad.
I don't think I'd be mad at all.
I don't think I could be mad. Like, after signing all these free agents, what if they gave up one of those 2 seconds? What, they got 37 and 41?
Yeah.
If you give up either 37 or 41 to move up, does that get it done for a non-quarterback?
I'm guessing
a four next year, too?
A second and maybe a one swap?
Yeah, you might. I'd probably give up one of those seconds because that's exactly what you need and who you need. And this guy looks like he could be Micah Parsons. Here's the problem. He talked about...
Mike Green?
Yeah, but he talked about both James Pierce Jr. and Mike Green. Mike Green, who led FBS in sacks and has this tremendous talent, he'd absolutely dominated with, like, elite pass rush grades, elite run defense grades, absolutely dominated while at Marshall. And as Matt Miller said, accused of sexual assault once in high school and once again at Virginia, and he spoke to this at the combine.
It didn't go well.
It didn't go well. So listen to Mike Green and see if you feel like this is a talent you want to invest in as he tries to tell you why he left Virginia and ended up at Marshall in terms of these allegations.
What did happen that caused you to leave?
Accusation.
The accusation of something?
Of sexual assault. That I've never been questioned about. That nobody ever investigated. No, I've never been charged with anything. And I'm just going to continue to stick to my process and just tell the truth and how it is. There's two. One in high school and one in college. And at Virginia, it was an anonymous report, so no, that it was no, it was nothing that came up out of it. There's no questions that even been asked of me. Out of high school, yes, they did do their due diligence, and they end up just closing the case. Yeah, there's a lot of talk out there. And it's just a bunch of people that really don't know what actually happened. I've never done anything wrong. I've never been charged with anything. My main focus right now is just telling these teams everything that they need and want to know. It's just a little frustrating just seeing online that everybody just has everything to say, and that's not the case. So. I'm just going to continue to stick to the process, and I'm confident in myself and the way I've been handling this process, so that's going to keep on doing.
I think the last, like, 20 seconds of that is better than the first minute of that, but still, that feels like a situation where you have to be prepared for that walking into the combine, and your agent has to have you ready to answer that question or not answer that question.
Are the Bears in a place where they can take a risk on a character question like this? I must say, a couple years ago, I was a guy not wanting them to do it on Jalen Carter, which is a different situation, different concerns, obviously. And, you know, people died in that one, and it was a different situation, obviously. But in terms of character, like, I didn't think the Bears had an infrastructure in place. Do they now? Do you feel better about the infrastructure now? I think you have to.
Yeah, I would say that you're in a much better place now because there's the leadership aspects of just the free agents that you brought in.
Grady Jarrett will be right there with him.
And Joe Tooney. You know what I mean? Like, you brought in guys on both sides of the ball.
And you've got Montez Sweat, who's already been here.
Right. So you're in a better place probably to absorb it.
We didn't have Fletcher Cox when it came time to draft Jalen Carter.
I still think they probably should have, but whatever. It that's gone. But with this guy, the due diligence has to be really strong. Because there's some alarming stuff, like, just in how he answered the question, that if I'm Ryan Poles, I'm not comfortable. Like,
and you got to be prepared for the PR hit aspect of it. Because if this guy's just going down the deny thing forever, if that's what he's going to do, you better find out whether people are going to come out of the woodwork and say, by the way, why did you draft this guy? I've got this email here. I've got this affidavit or whatever.
But the crazy part is that you just don't know. And you can look at the Justin Tucker stuff and be like, there's a guy who was the emblem for a great citizen. And then you find out, horrible citizen. You just don't know.
But if you know up front.
You can start to prepare yourself. So I
still worked out. Like, the Chiefs knew some stuff about Tyreek Hill up front and decided to go for it and with an infrastructure in place and to deal with the PR hit, and that all ended up working out pretty well from their perspective.
My thing is and I know that I've seen him do individual drills and stuff, and there's impressive tape on him. With Jalen Carter, the argument with Jalen Carter was he is the number one player in the draft.
And you got a chance to get him at 10. This guy might be worthy at 10, but might go 25.
He's probably DN 2, 3, or 4.
Right.
Are you willing to do that for that player?
That's a very different contextual situation where Jalen Carter was player number one and you could have got him at 10.
Yep. We need to take a break. When we come back, a little bit more Bears for you. I had this really interesting conversation this morning with Spice Adams, and then it ended up drifting into us talking about the Bears. I'll share a little bit with you and want to let Speaks hear what he thinks about what the Bears have done. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
Just got faded. Ah-ha-ha. Me and my son. Hit it. Yeah. Hit him with it one more time. Oh, dab on him.
Oh, he's so gonna appreciate the Dilla. That's outstanding. That's Spice Adams when his son was younger. His son does not sound like that anymore. And his son is going to be coming to a college football team near you very soon.
Spice Adams was a pretty darn good Bears defensive tackle. Also played in San Francisco for Mike Singletary. Incredible Mike Singletary stories. Great talker as a player. And became really, really fun just to have on and stuff.
Lower.
Oh, that was the Singletary stuff. So damn good.
And now he is everywhere.
Well, that's the thing. Once the playing career ended, dude became a viral video machine and has been producing his own stuff and ramping it up and worked with the Bears, worked with Fox, did stuff with a lot of different places. He's a very capable and facile media creator as a former player. It's one of the best at that.
It's a really beautiful story of someone looking to another place for their second act and what he's done, how popular he is. When you see him, like, I joke with Spice about this a lot. the idea that there are people that don't realize that he played football.
Right. Like
they just think that he's, you know, the court jester that they've seen. And he did this. It's Tahir Moore, right? The comedian Tahir Moore did this thing. Because, you know, Spice does the football. Like he always, Coach Dundon and a couple other the characters that he's come up with. And so Tahir was like, oh, yeah, well, let me just hold a pad. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah, why don't you get in your stance? Ha, ha, ha. And I was like, I cannot wait to see this. Because once you open the door for football players and you're kind of like, you didn't really play football, did you? Man.
Beat the hell out of him. Hit him hard.
He knew immediately. And Spice is just funny because once I get in that stance, you know, he was a nose tackle, fam.
Yeah, that's the real deal.
Yeah, he wasn't just out there. He was on every play being the garbage man of a defense and taking a beating and handing one out.
So you talked with Spice, and I know there's Bears stuff that you want to share with us. I know you talked to him for House of L, but I want to hear the Bears stuff. By the way, join 670 The Score and Shane Reardon at The Wall at Marcus Theaters Cinema in Gurnee tonight. From 7 to 9 p.m. for a College Hoops watch party.
You might want to leave right now.
Oh, well, I mean, Shane is. Go ahead, man. From 7 to 9, that's The Wall. It's an ultimate college basketball viewing experience. Enjoy specials on drafts and apps, plus enter to win score prizes. Visit thewall.marcustheaters.com for more info. And, oh, by the way, a reminder that we're giving away fish tickets every day this week. Another pair later, you will hear me reference a fish lyric. Eric in conversation, and you'll be the sixth caller to the contest line at 312-540-0670, and you will win a pair of tickets to see Fish on Sunday, the 20th of July at the United Center. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com.
So I sought Spice out because he had invited me up to Stevenson to watch his son play ball. His son is a defensive end there, and he's a highly regarded one that is taking all sorts of college tours this spring. I wanted him on to talk about being a sports dad because I think it's fun to watch these guys that I covered specifically. Now they're in the role of being coaches or just being dads, being volunteers. We talked with Olin about like him going around with his kids. He got two that play at the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter is what, an All-American volleyball player.
Yeah.
So I wanted to tap into like the idea of the sports dadness. So if you want to check out the entire episode, it's on House of L's YouTube page. And for those of you who subscribe, you probably already got it today. It's a really inspiring one because we talk about his weight loss and all sorts of stuff inside there. But since I had Spice there and he's at Hallis Hall a lot, I thought that I would ask him about the Bears and this offseason that's been really, really strong and what he's thought about it.
What I like is they address areas of need day one. So that kind of puts you at ease. And it's the interior of the line as well. And then you go out and get Grady. So, like, I'm like, bruh, bring it on now. Like, we got the foundation. Like, you can build your house now. You done already put the anchor down. You done already put the foundation of your house up. Like, when the wind comes, that house still going to be there. Like, you done already worked on the foundation, and then you worked on the leadership as well. You know what I'm saying? Like, these ain't no spring chickens you bring in here. These are guys who are bona fide Pro Bowlers and could teach the young guys something at the same time. So you got a win-win situation right here. And we look good on paper right now. Look very good. And I hope that we're going to have a great draft to complement what we already have. And it seems like, you know, everybody here wants to win, and they're going to bring that winning attitude here. So hopefully that'll just, like, rub off on the younger guys and the guys that get drafted, and then we can go on a run. This is a tough division, man, and you got to get it right. And it seems like we are on the right side of history when it comes to building this team, especially with the guys that they got coming in now.
What does it do to a locker room when a guy like Joe Tooney walks in with a whole bunch of Pro Bowls, All Pros, and Super Bowl rings?
You got to be the one to say, well, I ain't going to be the weakest link. They supposed to be bringing in the strongest links. I'm not going to be one of the ones that's going to be weak. So you got to take it upon yourself to be like, all right, it looked like, you know, they bringing some bona fide guys in. Let me be one of the guys that you trust when the season come up. So I think this is going to elevate everybody's level of game, like, because they're going to want to make that Pro Bowl too. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully they could, hey, man, this is what you got to do. This is how I watch film. This is how, you know, this is what we did at the Pro Bowl. This is what I learned from other offensive linemen. This is what I learned from this Hall of Famer. This is da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, before long, man, you know, everybody be on the train, man, ready to go. That's how it worked.
You excited to see what Caleb can be now that there have been some upgrades?
Yeah, man. Yeah, dude. And it's like, he didn't have a bad year.
No, he did not.
Like, I think throughout the whole season, he threw like 5 or 6 interceptions.
Yep.
As a rookie? Dude, like, come on, man. Like, you got to give that man his props. Like, of course he got sacked, or maybe he held the ball too long, whatever. And it's like, it's seeming like he was kind of like learning on his own almost. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like me learning how to edit, right? Like, I just threw myself in there to try to like learn, you know, how to do these things. And it's just straight trial and error. And it just seemed like that's how he was on the field. But it'd be some games where he'd do an audible and I'd be like, this is the first time I've seen this. Like, a rookie is coming up and he's checking at the line and he's like, oh no, wait a minute. You do this. Never. I was like, okay. But I mean, of course he needs some fine tuning. Like, you can't do that with 45 seconds left.
No, you cannot.
But I mean, I appreciate the effort. You know what I mean? Just know when to do it. You know what I mean?
It descended into us talking about Thanksgiving, because that's what he was referencing. And we had a good time talking about it. So, yeah, the whole episode is up on the YouTube page. It's Speaks. I'm not saying it just because it's House of L. It's one of the best episodes of House of L ever.
That's awesome.
He's so into being there for his son and working with his son and all the lessons that he learned. Him sharing it the way that he did was absolutely special.
That's cool. He's a funny man and a real a vulnerable dude too, it sounds like, with you on this. So that's really cool. I love hearing that. He got me thinking as he was talking about the middle of the line, that they got all the offensive linemen, as we know, and then they got Jarrett. And his reaction was, oh my goodness, you got the foundation. And I immediately thought of a house and like how without the foundation, it doesn't matter what your artistic flair ideas are for the art on the wall, or even for like, oh, let's do this with the door or the windows. Like, that stuff doesn't really matter. You're not going to function without the foundation. And it's just such a basic but sensible analogy for the offensive line and the defensive line. And I have to admit that it took me way too damn long to learn that basic sports lesson.
Well, I'm shocked by that because, I mean, you know.
Because of my center background?
Yeah,
my nose tackle background. No, you're right. You're right, Lawrence. But I also
like Spice Adams, you too were a nose tackle.
But I also liked fantasy football. You know what I mean? Like, I really enjoyed fantasy football. I loved highlights. And I really like high-flying stuff.
DJ, who's your mama?
I mean, I love all of it. But I have to admit that it took me way too damn long to learn this. And like all those years when people would say, and Chris Tannehill, I'll give you some credit for it. You, Chris Tannehill, very often would say in a football conversation, what about the lines? What about the offensive line? What about the defensive line? So here's my thought. Are there other sports lessons that it took you freaking forever to learn? Because I'm admitting right now that it took me way too damn long to realize that it doesn't matter if you don't have an offensive line and a defensive line. It doesn't matter who your wideouts are. It barely matters who your running back is. The quarterback is not the great deodorant that can make your garbage-ass line look survivable. I don't believe that anymore.
Unless it's Patrick Mahomes in a Super Bowl that you lose, and he's out there doing ungodly
stuff.
And
he's one of one. Correct. He's one of one. So this is a sports lesson. Took me way too damn long to learn. And I want to ask you at 312-644-6767. Are there other sports lessons that you can admit now, it's a safe space, that it took you way too long to freaking learn? And maybe it's the lines, too. Maybe you finally learned it. And you can admit that here. But what are some sports lessons that took you way too long to learn? For me, it's that the lines have to be there or else your other flashy NFL stuff just does not matter.
We will take your thoughts on it next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog.
We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you down, okay?
One.
So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
Yeah, that's definitely a learning lesson.
Speaks brought it up in the last segment because he was inspired by Spice Adams. Shameless plug, Spice Adams on the House of L podcast. You can check out the whole thing on YouTube. Just search House of L and you'll see it. It's a really great episode, man. I hope you watch it. I think you would enjoy it just from the father-son aspect of it.
I will definitely check it out.
There's a lot of wisdom in there. And it's like, you know, Spice was funny, but he wasn't on being funny today. He was being serious.
You could hear it even then. So you guys got a connection. That sounds good. The way he talked about the middle of the offensive line and the defensive line as the foundation, and now you can do whatever you want with the rest of the house. It's like, I know that's true. I know that's true, and it took me too damn long. So I'm wondering what sports lessons it took you too long to learn, you know? Because I have to admit that it took me too long to learn that. And a few good ones have come in via text. Here's one. Here's a sports lesson. Literally not just anyone can close games in baseball.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you on that. I think I knew that, though, from my time of covering it. Baseball's got a lot of lessons that... And you still learn and relearn and have to do all the learning with baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, like this concept, and that's where this is what I've learned because it matches what the texter said. The numbers don't tell the whole story with baseball. I am someone who tries to live on both sides of the line when it comes to how much analytics should be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's incumbent upon any baseball organization to be good at relaying the information and making sure that what they're giving players isn't just numbers for numbers' sake.
Uh-huh.
And when it comes to stuff like this, if you're a high leverage reliever, you're a high leverage reliever. In my experience of covering baseball, it's not true because people are human beings.
Yeah, you got the human. It's lead off. Lead off is the other one. Like, not just anybody can lead off. You can't just put a high OBP guy historically in lead off and expect him to just be himself. It just doesn't happen like that. Here's another one. Sports lesson. Basketball teams can't just be built on offense. You need a really good defensive system and defensive players to buy in as a collective. I like that. Here's one. A Cardinals fan. I didn't know how important a top-tier catcher was until Yadier Molina retired.
Yeah, that's a hard lesson to learn.
They have significant value to the flow and the management of a game. Yeah, yeah. Well, welcome to it. We got a phone call or two as well we can take here.
Let's go out to Rogers Park and Tony. Hey, Tony, you're on The Score.
What's up? Hey, guys, great show. I'm going to keep it in baseball also. Now, I'll preface this by saying a lot of this is based on the kind of baseball player I was way back in the day. I was a little speedy guy, slap hitter, blah, blah, blah. So it took me forever to accept that you can't win championships playing small ball. You have to have the big home run hitter. It took me a long time to accept that. I thought you could defense and speed your way to championships. You just can't.
I appreciate the phone call, man. Thank you so much for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with him on that too, Speegs, because I now have rules for sacrifice bunts. I don't think they should be completely eliminated. I think there is a time and a place for it. And the time and place for it is if you're playing for one run at the end of a game. In an in-game scenario, fine. Like, if you're into extra innings and the other team didn't score,
yeah.
If you would like to sacrifice the ghost runner on, from second to third in the next half of the inning, go with God. I am with you on moving that runner. Other than that, I don't have a lot of patience for it.
Tanny, you got a sports lesson that it took you way too damn long to learn?
Yeah, what does it say that I've got another baseball thing about the cruelty and the humbling that baseball will do to you on a pretty much daily basis if you watch it? I did not grow up watching Earl Weaver's Baltimore Orioles teams, but I do feel like there's, you know, that's my spirit animal. We talk about the three-run homer being the most important thing, basically. Yeah. I feel like it took me way too long. I'm not saying that I didn't think defense was important. I knew you had to be strong up the middle in baseball. Like, those are bedrock principles. But I used to say, you know, just give me a bunch of guys that'll hit 25, 30 bombs and you'll be fine. And then I watched Jose Valentin, and he was a fun player to watch, and he had a lot of big hits for the White Sox. But I'd rather have a guy who will just pick up the ball every time you hit it to him at shortstop as opposed to a guy hitting 30 bombs. You know what I mean? But then as you get older, you realize, oh, this is actually important at every single position, because one hit and the, you know, place a guy's position can have an impact on a game, on a series, on a season. Mm-hmm. So, like, undervaluing the importance of defense all around the diamond.
Oh, yes. I remember having that conversation with a former co-host whose name escapes me about, like, well, it's just, you know, it's like one of the three phases of the game, like three phases of football. It's like saying kicking is important when you're saying the defense is important. I'm like, no, defense, it's run prevention. Defense and pitching, they go hand in hand. It's even more than 50% of the game, in fact. Defensive
big
pitch,
chunk of the game.
Defensive pitching, I think, is even it's bigger. Anyway, I get a little caught up here.
JR is calling from Michigan. Hey, JR, you're on Spiegel and Holmes. What's on your mind?
Hey, first of all, Spiegs, thank you for waking up, man. I've been worried about the line since Cutler, and it's just been a long, ugly road. But welcome.
Thank you.
So, yeah, hey, my sports tip, golf. Yeah, speed kills in the game of golf. All my life, you know, you've been wanting to hit a ball like John Daly, hit a ball like Bryson DeChambeau. Us hacks, we cannot swing that fast. Speed kills. You know, as I've gotten better, it's because the speed of the swing is slowed down.
Oh, there we go.
Slow that swing down for us guys. You might not hit it 200 yards, you know, but you're going to find the ball.
You'll hit it straight. I like it. Texter said, man, really hope AK calls in, says that he now realizes you can't win a championship without a superstar in basketball.
Well, I don't know. They're going for that play-in game.
Let's discuss.
We can talk with Joe Cowley about all of that. He joins us next here on The Score.